and welcome to Chundersmith. I'm Brian. And what are we talking about today, buddy?
Attention might be one. Also,
escaping or avoiding something is definitely in there. Well, here's a perfectly good example. So, you are the scenario is that you were brought up in a religion or a faith or a belief system where the promise of family unity is very thoroughly emphasized, and therefore, if somebody chooses not to participate in that belief system, that there is the true threat in your belief system, in your symbolic belief system, of losing that person. And so to escape or avoid the loss of that person, you use guilt or shame or one of those tactics in order to try to keep them there. Yeah, well, loss aversion is a potential escape avoidance function. Like, if you're trying to avoid losing something, it is a little bit nebulous because it depends on what you're losing. You're trying to access something versus you're trying to avoid losing something. I guess it depends on that too. And one could make the argument that that is indeed access, but I think there's some fine detail between the two. Fine enough that it would be appropriate for the delineation in my book. So, you know, but escape avoidance. And then, of course, there's also that kind of an automatic component. Like, it feels good to reinforce the story that you tell yourself that, well, I'm righteous. And if you're not being righteous, then there must be a reason why you're not being righteous. Okay. So to use a common colloquialism, people who are empaths are empathetic, right? speak to a lot of experience with that, but that's an interesting concept. That's a good question. Well, one of the things. Say again, Les, because I want to hear that again. Let me consider that one more time. Yeah. 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 It's Well, it's a. So what I'm hearing there is so Dr. David Sloan Wilson talks about this concept. He talks about this concept of symbotypes or story narratives being a form of evolution that allows for societies or groups of people to evolve and adapt. And that adaptation doesn't necessarily mean best, it just means right for that environment. And so symbotypes or stories can be used to create group cohesion, because humans are a group-based organism. We work together. We can operate as individuals, but we succeed best when we're operating in cohesive groups. Yeah. Yeah. And so. Yeah. Well, that long development period, we think has a lot to do with, one, brain size, like the capacity for us to be able to be born with the size of the brains that we have, but possibly to the level of longevity we have, and the amount of calories we need to be able to consume in order to maintain the brain size that we have. Humans are fascinating because our behavioral repertoire is pretty flexible and very vast. There are creatures that definitely can live longer than us, but their access to the breadth and depth and flexibility of behaviors is pretty limited by comparison. That being said, I guess if they can live longer than us and produce more than us, then evolutionarily they're just as successful, perhaps even more. But either way, exactly. But in either case, the scenario you're describing is the use of story to bring conformity into the superorganism of a social group, a tribe, a band, a clan, whatever the heck you want to call it. And so that is a viable function for creating group cohesion. However, the problem with that is group cohesion always good? I would argue no. that's understandable. So the question of group cohesion is neither good nor bad, just like behavior is neither good nor bad. It's the question of is it serving a function? What function is it serving, and how does that benefit or detriment the ultimate goal of the group, which is, from what I can tell with humans, we want to perpetuate the genes, but some individuals within the organism, genetically speaking or evolutionarily speaking, it's okay if they don't perpetuate their genes so long as the species perpetuates their genes. Does that make sense? Yes, he did. Evolutionarily speaking, Genghis Khan is probably one of the most successful individuals in the human species, based strictly on the gene perpetuation argument. Yes. He is a terrible person, and he tore a lot of people apart with horses. So he is both figuratively and literally was a terrible person because he tore people apart with horses. Yeah. So, anyways, going back to the guilt chain. What were all those other things that you mentioned at the very beginning, very get-go? Oh, by the way, Heather's in the car.
Hello!
Like the little lie of you're not going to church because you want to look at porn or something like that, right? So, okay. So this actually reminds me a little bit of a really horrendous, funny but horrendous joke slash prank slash trap that teenagers would set for each other when I was growing up, of asking the question, hey, do your parents know that you're gay? And if you... Oh, yeah. And if you deny the fact that you're gay, then, like, so if you say no, because that's the mind. They're like, oh, they don't know that you're gay? Oh, what are you going to tell them that you're gay? you're so funny. And yeah, that. Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, not that there was anything wrong with that, but at the same time, like, when you're a teenage boy and someone's laying a trap for you like that, it's kind of offensive and a lot dominance gameplay, which is, looking back on it, pretty hilarious. But looking at it from that perspective at that particular point in time, like, let's just say that joke was played on me one time, and then from that point forward, instead of answering yes or no, I would think about the question, and then I would say something along the lines of, I'm not gay, do your parents know? But really, as an adult now, if someone were to try to pull that on me, I would just kind of stare at them and make them feel uncomfortable, because it would be a lot more fun that way. I've discovered the value of long silent stares. Ooh, that would be nice. Or maybe walk up to them and gently caress the side of their neck and say, well, after what happened last night, maybe you should tell them. Yeah, just make them feel really uncomfortable. And you're writing in your journal saying, one of us better admit, he better admit that he's playing gay chicken right now, because if he doesn't, I'm concerned that he's actually gay. I don't know. We're gonna start an we're gonna start a bed and breakfast together. I don't know. This is kind of. I'm getting a little nervous here. Now this is reminding me of Willem Dafoe's character in Boondock Saints. Just, man, yes, that's such denial, and I'm sure that really has happened. It's kind of dastardly that the culture has led to people having to feel that way. In all honesty, it makes me feel more than a little bit sad. are idiot women's. Is that what you're saying? I resemble that remark, sir. Or dollars, you know. Sometimes we make dollars, dude. I guess. But we're out of time. I'm sorry. That's 30 minutes. We can't talk anymore about anything. We're out of time. So, hey, that's been the Hey, all right. Hey, then thank you for joining us for Chunder Smith, and go away.